Inside a note 2.
A note 2, yep.
Okay, so I call October 3rd, 2023 Committee of the Whole meeting of Glencoe Park District to order. Lisa, please call the roll and note the time.
Great, it's 7:02. Member Boren?
Yes.
Commissioner Covey's gone. Commissioner Snyder?
Here.
Commissioner Spector?
Here.
Chair Spain?
Here. All right, so I think we can move on to discussion of the tax levy. I feel like we just did it.
We have not. It was last year. So.
Last year.
But, okay. You know, same process, but.
We talked about it a little bit. So this committee meeting is typically when we have a discussion on the upcoming tax levy. So the 2023 tax levy, we need to adopt that ordinance and file it with the county by the end of the calendar year, the last Tuesday of December, which happens to be the 26th this year. So this meeting kind of kicks off that process and we'll ultimately approve our truth in taxation ordinance. We'll have a hearing for truth in taxation. It's always been the district's practice to hold a truth in taxation hearing regardless of whether our levy ask exceeds 5% of the prior year final extended levy. So that'll be no different this year. Our truth in taxation meeting will be in November. We plan on having that in November before we vote on the final final ordinance that will ultimately be filed with the county clerk and used to collect our property taxes and then fund our majority of our next fiscal year. So there was a pretty lengthy detailed memo in this evening's packet. So I'll just kind of go over some things that are at a fairly high level here. So just as a reminder, since we are a non-home-rule taxing body, we are subject to what's commonly referred to as PITO or the tax cap, which basically says that on any existing property, existing EAD within the district boundaries, we cannot receive more than 5% or CPI, the lesser of those two numbers. This year's levy, we're once again operating in an environment where the 5% is the lesser of the two, as CPI outpaced the 5% again, and that's measured as of December 31, most recent year, so 12/31/22. So that does not include any new property within the district. There is no cap on any new property. So there is the ability for the district to collect beyond 5% based on new property activity, assuming that we properly levy for that new property. So as we look at the numbers of what we're proposing in terms of our operating levy, we're proposing a levy of $515,500. And that number is compared to the prior year, the prior year's unfortunately had to be based off of an estimate because each of the last 2 years the county has had issues with a computer compatibility issue between the county clerk and assessor, which has delayed the issuance of final extended rates for the levy. So that's really kind of complicated things each of the past 2 years and having to kind of really pull together estimates and kind of guess as to where prior year levy is before we come up with what we're determining what our levy should be for this year. That was no different this year, so we did come up with an estimate for what the prior year extended amounts were going to be, and that number was $5,242,932. For the operating levy, and that actually equated to a 3.29% increase from the prior year. Again, that was based off of an estimate. So, of course, yesterday, the county did issue the preliminary final statement, so we do have an idea of what that final extension is going to look like, and that number is about $90,000 less than our estimate, which is kind of what we planned. We always want to shoot high with our estimate, make sure we are capturing any new property that's going to apply to that year's levy. So when we compare the amount we're proposing to levy this year compared compared to the what we believe will be the final extension now for 2022. Rather than the 3.29%, that number is going to be slightly over 5. It will be about 5.15% for the operating levy. Again, since we hold the truth in taxation hearing, regardless of whether we do exceed that 5% or not, we still have that plan levy take care of that plan hearing, again, taking place at the November board meeting. So, really, the intent in our levy this year is, again, to make sure that we're capturing the 5% that we can capture on the old EAB, the existing EAB, and we are also including an additional buffer in there to make sure that we're able to capture any new property within the district. So that our proposal is to basically levy that to the maximum 5% in order to be able to keep pace with obviously our rapidly increasing operating costs. Again, just make sure we're capturing all that new property that goes along with it. So when you factor out the special rec fund, which is part of the operating levy, we're actually asking for about a 6.5% increase, which that 1.5% is going to make up the new property within the district. And so we're confident we will capture, you know, the 5% along with the additional 1.5%. The only other piece of the levy is the debt service levy. That's predetermined based off of the bond documents that are filed by the county clerk when we issue bonds. So that would be levied in accordance with our required debt service in the upcoming fiscal year. You might remember last year we did we did have a one-time abatement for existing to use existing debt service fund balance, which was an accumulation of county applied loss amounts. So we were able to provide some relief in the debt service levy in the prior year in the form of $240,000. Again, that one-time payment of last year. So the levy this year does reflect our full debt service requirements for our upcoming fiscal year. With that, I'd be happy to go over any specific questions that you might have on the levy or anything within the memo discussing the levy.
I have two questions. One is the amount above 5% that we could increase our taxes, but it's limited by PTL. As I understand, you abate that amount. Is that the correct term? The key question is, can you ever, either if Glencoe became a home rule community, or some other way, can we ever recapture that, or that's a missed opportunity?
It's basically a missed opportunity. The county, we don't have to debate anything on that. County just basically caps it at 5%. So our levy is always our levy is always comfortably higher than what's actually expended because we want to make sure that we do capture that existing increase in any property. So the county pretty much automatically calculates that.
Okay. That's what I was getting. And then somewhere here you mentioned, I think that for at least a couple of years we've allocated $515,000 for capital expenditures. So with inflation in real dollars, that amount is going down.
Yes, good point. And for several years it was capped at $500,000. Within the past couple of years, we've tried to ratchet that up, just recognizing the rising cost, because that typically funds our Fund 65 capital, which is our operating capital. So we have tried to recognize that, you know, based on increased capital costs for the operating capital, we have tried to kind of increase that gradually and finding the right balance there to ensure we're not pulling too much from our operating budget, because obviously that's what it comes from. Getting the funds
that
we need for operating.
Okay, all right, thank you.
What's the impact for the average household when we do a 5%? I guess I'm just curious to see if this is something that I think we should do it because of inflation, et cetera, but like, is this going to be noticeable? And I'm curious how many overlapping entities are going to be, you know, using their CPI cap.
Yeah. So I guess answering your second question first, there's been a lot of discussion amongst peer districts recently, especially now with the final rates being issued. And I can tell you the vast majority of them are either right at 4.99%, and that's intentional because not every district wants to hold that truth in taxation hearing, so that's very intentional that they're at 4.99%. Mm-hmm. And many are just going, you know, beyond 5% and making sure that they're capturing the new properties. I don't think there's any one that I've noticed in the past couple of days as we've been discussing amongst our peers that is not looking to at least capture the 5%. Mm-hmm. The question on impact for an overall for a homeowner is the answer. The simplest answer is it really is only 5% because that's what they're capped at for the district. The true answer there, though, is it really depends on where their assessed valuation is, because it's very likely that if someone's assessed valuation increases significantly, their bill is going to go up much more than 5%, and it really doesn't have any impact on the funds that are coming into the district. It's basically just allocated amongst the different homeowners. So when you have somebody who appeals their property taxes and gets a lower AAV, that's really just falls on the back of your neighbor, essentially, is how that works. Mm-hmm. So the answer is on an existing $1 million of the AAV, it really is 5%. And once we get the final extended rates, we're able to kind of lay that out and what it looks like in an actual property tax bill, applying the assessed valuation off the buyer, which just was issued, and applying it to the rates and everything.
So like the village and the school district all are subject to FITEL as well, so then your overall tax bill would go up by 5% roughly estimated.
Well,
if they all do it.
If EAD remain constant,
yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Thanks. So, does anybody have any further comment? We're looking for consensus if we want to advance this. All right. Is there a consensus to advance resolution number 956, Truth in Taxation, for approval at the October 17th board meeting?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. All right.
Yes.
I think we'll move forward. Okay.
All right.
And we have another update on 2024 health insurance, which I think it's just fascinating how much it's going up. So I'm looking forward to hearing about it or not. I don't know.
It is increasing significantly. So if you recall, this past summer we did renew our agreement with Derma Health for another 3-year commitment. So this is year one of that re-up with Derma Health. And overall, we're looking at about a 7.5% increase in premiums this year, which is certainly more than we've encountered in previous years. Since 2019, there's the average increase for PPO has been about 1.9%, and for HMO has been 4.6%. PricewaterhouseCoopers conducts an annual survey of actuaries that kind of generates the expected increase in medical costs for the following year, and their number was right around 7% for 2024. So the 7.5% is certainly not an anomaly in the marketplace. Another Wall Street Journal article had it right around that same range, around 6.5%. So while it is a sizable increase, we're certainly not alone. And it's something that we need to be cognizant of as we have to absorb that into our operating budget. And then, you know, really kind of plan how it's going to be in future years. One thing about it too is that Derma doesn't really take the approach with the property and casualty program. They're a little more proactive in trying to smooth out costs for catastrophic instances or trying to draw on fund balance reserves to be able to, you know, smooth out costs. And their approach with the medical program is that's really not a sustainable approach or option, which really is the case. It's not really financially sustainable to continue to try to just draw on your reserves as these medical costs increase for us. So again, overall, we're looking at a 7.5% increase. Beyond that, we did take a look at the current mix of plans that we're offering. In 2022 and 2023, we're allowed to offer three plans. We did offer the three plans, which were an HRA PPO option, high deductible health plan with PPO option, and then the HMO plan. So just to make sure we still have the right mix there, we did an analysis and took the standard PPO as kind of a benchmark for what that would cost the district based on our current mix of enrollees, and then just compare that cost to the HRA, to the high deductible plan. And ultimately what we concluded is that pretty comparable in total cost to the district. The HRA and the high deductible plan are still a little more cost effective, but there's also some added benefits and some flexibility that we're able to offer employees by offering the HRA and high deductible plan as our PPO option. We're going to continue to offer the HMO option. Last year, we significantly reduced the premiums that employees would have to contribute for the HMO plan. That was intentional, as it is a more cost-effective plan for the district. So that was effective in moving new folks back over from the PPO to the HMO. So we did achieve some cost savings there. So we'll continue to really offer the HMO compared to the PPO options, that you kind of review the contribution, employee contribution rates for 2024 compared to 23. We did increase them across the board, really in the same 7 to 8% range. So there isn't anything, any drastic changes in terms of employee premium contributions. The other aspect of the kind of medical expenses that we wanted to just point out here is a couple of years ago now, we rolled out our insurance buyout program. So basically, if an employee declined coverage within our medical program, we offered them a buyout to help incentivize those folks who were either on the fence between choosing our plan or their spouses or someone in their household's plan. So that's been really an overwhelming success for us. As we sit here today, we have 48 full-time eligible medical benefit eligible employees, and 10 of those have opted for the buyout, 5 of which are family eligible, and each family could cost the district up to $35,000 a year. So the insurance buyout has really been an effective tool to help manage overall health insurance costs for us. So with that being said, we also did just propose an increase to the buyout amounts, just keeping track of inflation. So that's at about a 5-6% increase from 23 to 24, depending on the level of the buyout between family, employee plus one, and employee. Any questions on medical insurance?
So in the chart for grade 1 and grade 7, so we're not offering the PPO then?
So with the grade 1, grade 7 employees, there's only the offer of the HMO.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the group in Children's Circle, that those were the new positions that we added, and that was kind of the compromise that we had to reach to be able to bring on the new positions and still be able to afford being able to fund them. So we keep it at HMO, and we really only subsidize HMO for the employee themselves, or if it is an employee plus a child, and we subsidize it. Those rates beyond that basically recognize the amount that would be subsidized for employee plus child, and then they just kind of make up the difference.
Okay. So but in the grade 1 chart, I don't see the PPO option. So is that eligible to anyone or not?
Grade 1 is, the PPO is, grade 1 employees are eligible to choose between the PPO or the HMO. The HDHD and the HRA are both PPO plans.
Okay.
One's a health reimbursement account, the other's a high deductible health plan. So okay, there's just some flexibility in terms of tax advantage, out-of-pocket premiums, deductibles, and then that's why we offer the two options. If you're a person that, you know, really focuses on preventative care, you're not at the doctor too often, the high deductible health plan is a really great option for those folks because there's a district contribution that comes along with that, and they're able to kind of carry that money with them, whereas the HRA is really the district just pays for whatever is needed in that fiscal year, but there's really no carryover or tax advantage. That's really the main difference between the HRA and the high deductible health plan, plus they're both PPO, Blue Cross Blue Shield PPO options.
Unfortunately, I know we all know from our personal insurance that
Yep. How does this align with what we expected the increase to be? Like, do we have to? I mean, I guess this starts, there's really only 2 months of the fiscal year that absorb this cost, right? Currently, does that,
what do you think? Yeah, we budgeted for a contingency in our fiscal 24 budget. So, we will be able to absorb it. And again, with the amount of buyouts, we are trying to get a positive direction, budget to actual for overall health insurance. Certainly, it will need to be something that we look at as we get into our fiscal 25 budgeting process. Obviously, we just talked about our property taxes, which are essentially capped at 5%. So, this is just another example as to why we need to really try to capture as much of that 5% and property as we possibly can to be able to fund our pricing and operating costs.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Anybody have any further questions? No. Okay. Is there consensus to advance the 2024 health insurance options as presented for approval at the October 17th board meeting?
Yep.
Yes.
Okay. All right. So Erica and Kyle are going to give us a Green Team Committee update.
So as you know, the Park District has about four different individual teams that is made up of team members from all departments. So we're going to, when we see a lull and maybe a committee agenda, bring one of those teams to give a presentation what they're working on. So today's is the Green Team. So Erica is our team leader on this committee and works with Kyle as an administrative liaison. So turn it over to you.
Thanks for having me. As you said, I'm Erica Rigaldi. I'm the Arts and Youth Program Manager. It's my main role here at the Park District. But I also have a very environmental background, so I joined the team, quickly joined the Green Team, and I'm chairman of the committee. We gave an update to the rest of the GPD staff, so it's an opportunity to share with you some of our updates and accomplishments over the last year as well. So as Lisa mentioned, the Green Team is one of many committees that we have. We work on projects and initiatives that focus on improving the environmental sustainability in our parks and our programs and at all of our facilities. The Green Team does have representation from several different departments and areas on the team as well. So some of our top kind of accomplishments or updates that we completed over the last year. One of them was our annual Earth Day event, which we worked with volunteers to collect over 200 pounds of waste and recycled materials from Everly Wildflower Sanctuary and at Glencoe Beach. And we didn't have the best weather this Earth Day. It was sleet, snow, rain. We still collected 200 pounds of waste, so it's a really great event that we'll continue to do. We also had representation from the Friends of the Green Bay Trail and the Sustainability Task Force providing some educational activities at the event. Jenny helped host the GPD Apparel Share Shop. And so this year we had 111 pieces of Share Shop items, so GPD apparel, that were picked up to be reused by different staff members that they maybe didn't want anymore, and everyone was invited to pick up a piece. We also started a composting pilot program at our Sun Fun Camp. So we worked with the Women-Owned Collective Resources Composting Group, which is based out of Evanston, and they provided a weekly compost tote. You may have seen it outside the building. the small green totes. We mostly focus on composting camp lunch items. It can accept any, pretty much any forms of food or paper waste. We also were able to compost leftover food from our cookouts and our overnighters. And so we diverted a large amount of waste from landfills to that program. And we hope to expand more next year. We also have rain garden installations that went in. So we have planted at Shelton Park along Green Bay Road and then also along Green Bay Road and South Avenue. And so these rain garden plantings will help alleviate some of the surface water drainage issues, so standing water issues that we're having in these places. As well as once they're established with larger plantings, it will be a good native habitat for wildlife and pollinators. And then additional to just planting the rain gardens, we worked with Aaron to add educational signage, as well as we're going to use a QR code that will bring them to more information if they wanted to do this at their own home, what plants are planted here, and how you could do this too. We also have partnerships with the Friends of the Green Bay Trail and the community garden, so partnering with Friends of the Green Bay Trail for trail cleanups, as well as planting days in our parks. There's actually one next week that will be at Woodlawn Park for a new planting. And then we provide the greenhouse space for growing plants, as well as supplying the water and electric to the Glencoe Community Garden. A few more things. Native plantings, one of our largest areas of improvement, so moving away from mass annual plantings, which, a lot of plastic involved in planting annuals and greenhouse gas emissions associated with that. So we'll continue planting more native plants and perennial plantings in our garden bed. Fall Park is planted and Lakefront Park will also be planted this fall. You guys probably noticed we transplanted some grasses next to Taken. So further area to reduce some of our annual plant purchases. We also this year used compostable products at some of our special events. So switch from using plastic cups to a compostable cup for the 4th of July celebration and Beer on the Pier. We'll continue to work with composting organizations like Collective Resources that would also then offer commercial composting of these products at the special events. We still have our apiary, which has three hives that are still doing well into the fall to help with pollinating plants and producing local honey. We've made improvements on using less salt on the pavement. So we have a new steer skid broom that was purchased for snow removal. And it this helps sweep the hardscapes more cleanly compared to plowing or snow blowing, which will help reduce the use of salt in these areas. And then additionally, using a new product called Entry Chloride-Free Liquid Ice Melt, which is one of the only Green Seal certified ice melt products, so less harmful on the soil and the environment. And then we have a new logging recycling program. It's kind of hidden away. We're thinking about maybe a new spot, but it collects snack pouches and batteries. So for special use recycling, that wouldn't be available in a residential setting. We're going to continue to work on marketing this brand. It's kind of brand new. So getting word out more about it and maybe a more visible location to collect more items. The Green Team also went through an exercise to kind of the iCurrent environmental report card. This assessed our environmental impacts and stewardship. We went through the scoring with a subset of the Green Team, and we scored in the very good job range, which is just below the environmental leader range, which is the top range. So our strongest areas are facility management and maintenance, and then also parks and natural resource management. Our greatest areas of improvement are in our purchasing and programming. So some of our ongoing initiatives that we're consistently working on, we're working to update our tree inventory and tree care management plan by working with Great Lakes Urban Forestry. This will give us more information. We'll get more information regarding the climate by the end of the fiscal year. And this was possible through the grant through the Morton Arboretum. We also continue to use recycled fever products in the facilities. We use high-efficiency HVAC and plumbing fixtures. And then continue to swap out traditional lighting for LEDs in our facilities. And we have a stewardship agreement with Visa Associates, which provides natural land management. And we use this at our Everly to give Shelton Falls Park. Using this method helps control invasive species through more manual removal and control burns to reduce herbicide use in these spaces. We have some fun upcoming ideas. It looks really large on this. Before we get to that, we're going to improve the natural area. So we hope to continue to improve natural areas at the Clarities Bird Sanctuary and along the bluff at Lakefront Park through staff management and stewardship. So looking ahead, hopefully finding a balance between that to kind of redevelop those spaces by planting less annuals, having, like we said, more natives, more perennial plants. We also are growing some native trees in our greenhouses and that. We hope to, in connection kind of with the environmental report card score, do more nature programming, so visiting classrooms, camps, and libraries to provide education on nature-based topics, you know, using the apiary, recycling, you know, variety of topics, and continue to work on introducing these into the lectures in our camps and programs that we already have existing, introducing those topics to those programs. Sustainable purchasing, so continue to consider energy efficiency and environmentally friendly materials with our new equipment and furniture purchases. In addition, like with Amazon, you can select from climate pledge friendly options in there as some of our preferred purchases. So working closely with, you know, with the whole team on what they're choosing to buy, how often we're getting it shipped, et cetera. We're going to post more educational signage throughout the building. So teaching people how to recycle, letting them know how to recycle, and also just informing people of the other environmental initiatives that we have going on in the building. And then we also are exploring some creative weed control options. So in an effort to continue to reduce herbicide use, we have explored some weed burning tools. We're going to start utilizing a clover grass blend, which will help with that, and also renting your herd of goats to remove some of our invasive species in the parks. So very cool. We figured the goats would, you know, have some questions for you. So the main point we'll dive more into. Goat grazing, we're definitely not going to be the first people to do it, but it is a natural way to have an area cleared of invasives and overgrown brush. So Kyle was at the meeting, we met with Kim Hunter, who's known as the Green Goat Lady. We had her meet us at Lakefront Park, which she said, and then also Milton Park. So Milton is comparable in size to Clarity's Bird Sanctuary and Everly Park. The goats will be brought in on a trailer and they stay on the site 24 hours a day. An electric fence keeps them in, not like a dog collar electric fence, like a barn electric fence. And then a secondary fence would be installed as a barrier so the public doesn't touch the electric fence. So a combination of Kim, the staff, and volunteers would check in on the goats throughout the day and supervise, you know, from about 6 in the morning till 9 at night. The goats would clear roughly 130 to 300 feet per day. The site at Milton is about 1 acre, and so it would take about 5 days for the goats to clear that area. The goats clear invasive species and overgrown natural areas, but they pretty much clear anything, like everything that's there. We could offset the cost of this program by you doing programming associated with the goat, so name a goat, or doing some goat education, maybe separate from the grazing goats, have goat yoga, some creative options there. But the estimated cost would be about $2,500 to clear Milton. And this would need to be done on a semi-annual basis to have a long-lasting impact. Because the plants will grow back initially, but the more you do it, the less dense they'll grow in. So some of the concerns and considerations that we thought about would meet with the village and have conversations, communication to the neighbors when they haven't heard ghosts next to their house, public at large about driving past ghosts. So just make sure we over-communicate the plan to them. And then the containment of the ghosts, making sure that the fence remains up, you know, monitoring, making sure that nothing strange has happened. Encouraging people to keep their dogs away, so we'll likely need to monitor that sidewalk because goats are very afraid of dogs. And then educating the public on why, you know, why are we doing this? You know, letting them know the benefits of reducing herbicide use and removing invasive species. Questions and comments?
Did you go back to the village already on this?
Yeah, we did. We actually met with the village last week. They're very open to it. There's no I guess law for a public entity to have goats or farm animals on there. Since private, you could not do it. But we can. So they were open to it.
I have one liability issues with an electric fence. I'm just thinking of every possible kind of disaster from a teenager hopping the barrier to that, thinking it's funny.
That's it.
Some stray dog or animal getting through. But not only that, how the residential areas surrounding is where I'm wondering, like, I can't see out the neighbors by these parks being too keen on any of the sounds, smells, and whatever.
I'm thinking my farming background is finally coming to my professional life. I'm just so excited right now because I had pet goats growing up. That was my 4-H animal, Buck and Penny, if you want to know, kind of like that. So goats are actually very quiet animals unless they're being attacked in some way, harassed. And they're not as smelly as you think. They're only there for 5 days, so they're not it's not like pigs or actually chickens. They're actually not that smelly, and their poop is very pellet-like, and it's composed naturally in the ground. So they're not loud. They're not smelly at that short a duration for 5 days. So that's not there. As far as electric fence, it won't kill you. It will shock you, and it will make you never want to touch it again. But you don't get hurt. There's no burn. You just go, you know. So, yes, is there a liability? But if you post, we check through Proderma to make sure they're okay. We know another Proderma Park District is doing this, but yet maybe not in such a urban area. That's why you put the original fence around and signage, and then you put another bad fence around.
So the fence is kind of like a cattle prod, kind of zap almost.
It is. It's like a if you've touched a low volt electric, it's okay. Same kind of thing. You just it can make you kind of jump back. Doesn't make you pass out.
I wasn't thinking like Jurassic Park.
No, it's not that. It will like zap you and it won't even burn your hand. But it tells you not to touch it again. I guess you could say which.
So what is?
Some people would want that in our playgrounds.
If someone's walking by with a dog and the dog scares the goats, what's that interaction like? Because again, I'm just trying to think of any scenario that is going to irritate surrounding residential.
See, if you remember, we're going to have a snow fence around the perimeter, and then we're going to block off the sidewalks so the dogs can't go down the sidewalks on that side. Then there'll be a buffer, so it won't be like snow fence and the electric. There'll be a little buffer and then the electric fence. So the chance of a dog getting that close to them is very rare.
And the goats would just get scared.
Yeah.
They would be stressed out, which is more kids concerned that we're going to stress out.
Well, I didn't think they were starting to engage.
Yeah, there's no
giving up. I didn't know if they were going to make noise and run or if it was going to disrupt the process of clearing out.
They would probably stop eating, because they would go high.
Right.
Chances are the dogs won't even see them unless someone takes them over the fence to see them, And the chances are most of the people won't even know they're there.
I'm all for this.
We'll publicize it. It is definitely outside the realm of normal.
I'm 100% in support of this for more of the social experiment than anything else.
Contract
with her that says she's responsible for her goats,
I'll be responsible for
what happens to her goats. So we haven't seen the actual contract with her, but she would be,
if we were sort of never, we would overstaff it, I think, for the first try, certainly. She would offer to stay for as long a period of time as we want her to stay. I think the general idea would be she would be here for the meaningful bulk during work hours, and then staff would cover outside those hours up until the evening, and, you know, professional initiative would subside.
Yeah.
I think ultimately we would obviously have to get certificates of insurance from her, run it through Moderna, make sure we cover all those potential situations. But if a goat were to get out, she would be called immediately, we would move public safety in, and we would, you know, have to go down. But we haven't gone that far down the road yet with, you know, that language within the contract.
We just wanted to see if this is something that the board would be open to. I guess there was risk if a goat gets out and eats someone's prized roses.
Or just hit by a car.
I mean, from what she said, it's highly unlikely that the chances of the fence being compromised would be from like a tree falling on the fence, which obviously could happen, but would not be like a common occurrence.
So how long do they have to be in the park to clear it out? You said 5 days.
Yeah, about 5 days.
So we would have them there for 5 days, and then they have to come back like another time throughout the year for another 5 days, and then do you have to repeat this every year, or?
Not necessarily. She explained it to us pretty well. It's like, you know, you can only go back to the bank to regrow plants so many times, so the first time it would probably have some energy source left in its roots to regrow, but then every time you do it, it has less energy left to regrow. So after we get them under control and then, you know, lessen the amount of invasives coming back, we'd be able to do more native plantings or seed it with things that we like, then they would actually have a chance of competing.
Got it.
I think you could like a little bit like the prescribed burns, where you don't have to prescribe burn every single year.
Yeah.
And if you said money, we need to, I think, to retain it over time, reduce how frequently you
need. I mean, and which park would we be testing with that?
So Milton was the initial discussion. So we met at Lake Park because we liked the idea of it's a really hard area to get into here. I don't think that's the place to pilot this at, just given the amount of foot traffic, the vehicle, there's a lot of potential obstacles there. So a place like Milton, Farragut is a similar size as Everly. Those would all be, I think, good options. Smaller scale natural areas, generally passive parks. So Milton was the first thought, but certainly, you know, if there was more of an appetite for somewhere like Farragut, that could be.
How many goats on this?
20 to 30.
Okay.
And they're there overnight.
Yep.
And then it's yours.
Hey.
Not necessarily.
Want us to be sustainable?
Okay.
Well, it's just like, there you go. It's a duty.
How much safety? How
much
safety?
I think if we pursued this, we would have powerful discussions with the village and public safety.
Yep.
If they could maybe assist with an overnight, just to make sure nobody had risk of the fence. And because, as Eric pointed out, like the real risk is that the fence gets compromised and the goats get out. But if we're staffing it to keep people from doing that and making sure it's all the fence, I think certainly something we can potentially afford.
I think it's great. That's all I'm thinking of is how I was in high school and like my friend group.
Well, even if we wanted to do the exact.
I think it's fantastic where, you know, there's so many people say, well, we've got green projects and, you know, they're doing something somewhere else and we do the same thing. And here it's like, no, we're going to bring in goats and, you know, there's no gasoline involved except we need to get them there. And it's all natural, as you would see in a rural area. And it sparks creative thinking, and I like the idea of starting it somewhere out of the way. But if they end up in Cock Park at some point after people are used to it, I think that would be terrific. People would say, "Hey, this is really good. We're doing something, you know, it's something that some people, not all, obviously, but some people say, hey, this is really nice. We're doing something, and it doesn't cause any potential risk factors." That's what I like about, like you said, people call up and they go, there are dandelions all over the park. And I go, that's fantastic. That means we're not using much herbicide in those parks. That means they're healthy parks. You have to kind of have a paradigm shift. But I think it's great.
And as far as green and like not using that, using chemicals that are harmful to the environment, to people, whatever, yeah, it's a fantastic idea. And if the public is good with it and they don't get pushback, I mean, I'm a fan of it because it's different. Like you said, it's innovative. But again, I'm just curious more on the public's input. I think it's fantastic for so many reasons.
But we could also, if we were worried about, maybe the snow fence wasn't enough, it'd be more expensive. We could do like a construction fence, for example, what we have around Watts, right? That's a lot more expensive to do, obviously, because we're at that fence. But if we were worried about that, we could put the higher construction fence and then the electric fence around it too, you know. And if we did this, once we found out if Pederm was okay with it in the area we're thinking, I would recommend doing a community meeting just to educate the people around it. Hey, we're talking about this initiative. Please come and learn more about it. Because once you start learning about it, you realize that people are like, well, they'll be really loud. I'm like, well, goats don't really make that much noise, actually. As you start learning about goats, they don't. They're quiet. They're quiet animals.
Like just like an information email, regardless, because assuming people are like, I can't attend this event, or I don't want to.
But yeah, regardless, we would, but that way they would have a chance before the board say yes or no for this. But we just really wanted to see if you're like absolutely not, that you're crazy. Well, then we're not going to investigate anymore. But if you say yeah, investigate, well then we're going to put it in our budget as a possibility. We don't have to spend it if we decide not to. But and we will just keep on going down that road. So,
my last question, I promise. You said what points of the year would this happen? Like, is this going to happen like dead of summer when there's heavy traffic, or would it be kind of like spring, fall?
Spring and fall. Okay. You would want the plants to come in as many times as possible, so it's as effective as possible. And then you wouldn't want to do it too late in the fall. Just again, so that they're eating as much as possible.
I mean, if we want to be a gold medal, whatever, the best at everything, I mean, I feel like goats falls into that category.
I think it does. I agree.
But that means we're the ones who should do this.
Yeah,
do we
are.
Do
really
our like neighboring like communities do it?
I don't know.
No. The closest one I know is Daughters Grove.
Great.
So.
That's far.
Project that was a huge one. O'Hare has an entire herd of goats that basically grazes the perimeter outside their fence. That's the largest one, but that's almost like a permanent fixture there. This is not a road that was only 100 times for the river.
Yeah. She mentioned that the Metro, was the Metro or the
I think it was Chicago. It was either CPA or Chicago partnership. It was just in the process of working on a contract. So.
I mean, we don't have spaces like some of the spaces that her goats graze, but steep slopes, areas where it's very difficult to get staff to, or unsafe for them to work, is good places for goats to graze.
Here's by the way, from the bluff of the initial thought, but I think that one would be down the line. If
this works, we would then investigate that.
If they turn them on the bluffs, like
that's where they love, okay. Yeah.
Oh, no.
They can climb anything. Crazy.
I mean, no one else is doing it over here, I think.
Definitely go programming. Have to go with it.
And we would totally. There would be a whole educational. Because not only would you get people out there to see the goats, then we could educate people on why we're doing this and other sustainability measures. And we've already talked to, I believe, the Friends of the Green Bay Trail. Was that it? Who said they would be interested in maybe volunteering for some of these goat watching shifts. So.
I think it's close to West. They can walk over.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Goat unit science class. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'll take a shift from the troll.
Yeah.
It's definitely interesting. Definitely
very. So you're not opposed?
I mean, I think it's weird, and I'm a little worried about the safety issues, but I mean, if the insurance signs off, if we sign a contract, then
look how cute they are.
I think Carol's a good point. We're a gold medal award-winning park district. If anybody could do this, it's us. And it's the kind of thing you want to stretch. I would think we'd stretch it like this. I think there's a hidden problem. But the hidden problem is, like, neighborhoods will want therapy when the goats are gone. It's like, I want them back.
Yeah, that's what I'm afraid of.
Went out the farm, you know.
You can have a bunch of pet goats.
Can you bring one back?
No, we can tell them the next park that they're going to be at.
Yeah.
You know, bring the kids to that.
Okay, so we're advancing it forward.
I have a question on pesticide use. You said like Piso and Associates, I guess, comes in and does some pesticide.
Yeah.
What do they do that's different than what we would normally do? Or
so they'll work on our natural areas that were outlined there, and so they'll come in and remove invasives. They do treat herbicides and they remove plants, and then they'll also harvest seeds from the native plantings from that location and replant them there to have those native plantings kind of take over. That's what they specialize in.
They're doing some herbicide, but they're it's limited.
It's some.
Okay,
so a lot of the invasives is once you remove them, you have to spray them unless you're in the tea. It just don't keep coming back every October. So it's a necessary evil in some places.
Okay, great.
So Erica's so modest, but she's been a great help in this, and this is definitely her background and her passion. So she's been great at spearheading all the green initiatives, not just the goats. We're just, I think Kyle and I talking one day, like, go to the goats. But she's been a great, the bees have never been happier under her care, and she could go on for a long time. But one thing we have identified that we need to grow on is more educational things, and we just have to figure out how we can make that happen moving forward. So
okay, so is there any other business?
Just really quick, I just found out today, and it was great, early childhood is having a harvest fest this Thursday, and those are one of our ELC and CLU Children's Circle. It's one of those events that we're trying to do, and kudos to Jessica and Bobby to bring our early childhood families together and get to know each other as all these new people are moving to town. And so last year we had 60, and this year we have over 200. So incredible turnout for that. So that just shows the desire for our community to want to get together and get to know each other and really come out for our events. The same happened this weekend with Mud Run, so I just have to give kudos to actually all the teams, because the whole team, this is one of the special events that pretty much all full-time staff are required to work at unless they have something else going on that takes precedent. But I've never seen a team work better at this event. There's about 6 other park districts that do this Mud Run, and their numbers are going down, 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 and ours are going up, 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 and it's because of the way those two teams work together. Parks team building the wacky things that the rec team comes up with, and now the parks teams are coming up with the wacky ones, and they're not afraid of digging up the park or making a mess, because then they restore it. So you don't see that every day, so I have to congratulate them as both team leaders and then getting their staff excited about it, because you don't see that every day, and they just go the extra mile to make a really cool event even better, which is just amazing.
Do we know how many participants?
We had over 500, correct?
Just over 500.
Wow.
Over 500, and then with parents and everything there, it was hilarious. And this year they added a parent-child, so if you wanted to run with your parent, you could have then. So that was something they kept on asking about, and people wanted to do it because those little kids wanted to do it. So hopefully still it's a rite of passage to do it on your own as you get to a certain age, but parents wanted to do it with their kids. So it was really cute watching that, too.
Yeah, they've been asking for years. So
yeah, yeah. Yeah. So kudos for them. So that was doing a great job. So I believe we told you that Marty is leaving, and so we have a plan in place already of who will be taking that position internally, and we'll talk about that more probably at the next board meeting. So that's about it.
Any business? Coming back for their mom?
Yes, I had that on my list.
Basically, the shift on the 29th, so that was Friday. That's
Woodlawn Spinner.
Top line, there's back and forth, long story short, they shipped an entire preview mix for installation, and it's interesting itself. It's top of the list when you
get it. That's one example when we buy something right off that's brand new that they didn't even have parts, or they improved it through the last couple of years, and so they finally just said, you're getting a new one. So so it is coming, but it's been gone for a long time. We weren't happy about that either, so thank you for the update on that.
The lakefront
swings
are great. Every time I walk, I mean, you can't get on.
The new ones?
The leaf is flat, and there's always someone sitting there, and I can't help. I
want that.
They're on the bottom. So they're really popular.
And the checkers, you can use the chessboards, checkerboards?
I haven't noticed.
I've seen.
We put stones on it to play, but I haven't seen the
check that out. I didn't even notice they were there.
Yeah.
I usually just stick to the pack.
Okay. Oh, good. I'm glad you saw that because they are, both of them are being very, and Coach Kyle, he put a little split rail fence because someone was like, someone's going to fall down the, so he just put the little split rail up there to make sure, just make sure.
Did you guys trim the trees there, or
Was
that always a good idea?
We did trim just in front of the swing benches to the vantage point, but that kind of piggybacks the dovetails onto the conversation about the natural areas and control areas. We can kind of reestablish some of that sight line because that stuff just grows incredibly fast and it's difficult to access and control. So
those are non-native plantings in there that are not the best, taken over. So,
that's
but yes.
That's a good idea. Because you can, I'm sure, because that's so popular, so people are going to be standing on it.
They're going to demand more all along. We did get a call from someone about the trains, because every year about this time, and as you know, I just remind the board that the board, and when we were doing the Duke Park, we knew that the trains and the water feature would be probably a bigger disturbance than normally for most parks that were put in. So the board chose to keep that traction open Memorial Day, Labor Day, and then we took them out. So we did follow along with that. So we do get a few complaints about that, but not as much as you think. They kind of give something to look forward to and also give a break to the neighbors because both of those features can be a little louder than normal playgrounds. So in case you get any questions, that is why.
Didn't I see that there's, it looked like there's going to be a foundation or something for the porta potty there or something?
Yes.
Concrete's coming Friday.
Okay, good.
But then on the porta Friday, the structure should be put in next to weather permitting, and then some planting.
So it would be like a concrete pad big enough for two porta potties.
Just for one.
Okay.
It'll look like the one at Lakefront, right?
Yeah.
Similar. It'll be the cedar.
Okay, cedar. Okay.
Cedar, and it'll be the handicap accessible, so a little bigger one, and then we'll put arborvitae around it.
Okay. Oh, great.
Yeah. So give a natural light, so cedar and the plantings, so they'll look really nice. Thank you. And that's it. That's all I have.
Okay. I entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
All right, roll call vote, please.
You can say all in favor.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed, same side?
Opposed, no.
Okay. All right, 7:59.
All right. Please record the time. You did. All right.
All right, thank you all.
Thank you.